Okay, looks like everyone took their seats here. All right, make sure I got this mic right so everyone can hear me. Good afternoon. My name is Tom Wallace. I'm the Bureau Chief of Medicaid Program Finance, and I'll be facilitating today's meeting and going through this process with Navigant Healthcare here. First of all, I'd just like to welcome everyone here. We are at the Nursing Home Prospective Payment System meeting. This is a public meeting. It's going to be the first of four or five public meetings as we go through this process. It's probably good to let everyone know here that this is being recorded. This public meeting will be recorded. We have, you know, someone back here recording this. After the meeting's done, this recording will be posted on our website. So anyone can always go back if you happen to miss this or want to hear it again, can go back and listen to that. All conference lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. And we will unmute those lines when it's time to ask questions or take public comment as we go through this process. It'd be good to note that for those of you who are on the line here on the phone and would like a copy of the meeting materials, if you have not noticed, they can go to our website. So if you go to the agency's website, that's aca.myflorida.com, we have a hyperlink on there that's titled Medicaid. And then within that Medicaid, if you scroll down that website there on that page, there'll be another hyperlink that's called Nursing Home Prospective Payment System. And then in there, you'll see a copy of today's agenda and also the PowerPoint slide that Navigant will be going through. There's also a link on there for the webinar. So this is being broadcast via a webinar too. So in the future, if you want to keep up to date on what's going on with this process, any kind of materials we have for these public meetings as we go along here will be posted to this website. So they'll be out there and available for anyone who wants to check them out. So with that, you know, we can go ahead and begin the meeting. And first of all, I'd like to go ahead and just talk about the process a little bit and what we're going through here. This is not the first time the agency has held public meetings for prospective payment systems. We have done this in the past for inpatient hospital, for outpatient hospital, both DRGs and then EAPGs. So this is obviously the first time for nursing homes. So we've done this before. We had a legislative direction to proceed that came out this past session to move our current per diem reimbursement, nursing home reimbursement system, to a prospective payment system. And to do that, the agency had to hire a consultant to produce a study on this payment system, which will be presented to the governor and the legislature by January 1st. I'm sure everyone's aware of that. So we have engaged Navigant Consulting, who I have up here with me. Navigant has been a contractor for the agency for about 4 years, a little over 4 years now. So they're the ones that helped us through the DRG conversion process and then also EAPGs. And so I'd like to also just welcome here, you know, Tom Wallace, Bureau Chief, Medicaid Program Finance, and then also my team. I have Lisa Smith, who is sitting over here. I know a lot of you may already know who she is, but she is the administrator over the nursing home and audit services section under myself here. And actually, her name will be up on the board on the slide deck when we get to the very last slide, that you can reach out to her for any kind of information and if you need any questions or comments as we move forward with this process in the future. One thing I want to mention too, as we get to the public comment period, if we'll have a mic, we'll pass that around to everyone, whoever wants to make a public comment. If you could please just state your name and the organization you're with, we'd appreciate that, as well as when you ask, if you have questions to ask, if you could do that too. So Navigant will be presenting a presentation. I'll just let them kind of introduce themselves. I'll first say that, you know, we had Navigant here, like I said, for about 4 years, and Malcolm Ferguson, who's sitting here next to me, he was, you know, the main person behind moving and performing those studies on DRGs and also EAPGs. And so with that, how about that we go ahead and just introduce ourselves?
I'm Jay Bulot. I'm with Navigant's team, and my background is in AG disability policy. I began my career in long-term care administration, taught long-term care administration, and moved on to state government where I was state directors in several southern states over aging and disability services.
I'm Dan McClary. I'm the Assistant Deputy Secretary for Medicaid Finance and Analytics.
As Tom mentioned, I'm Malcolm Ferguson, also with Navigant on our rate setting team.
I'm Scott Mackey with Navigant as well on our long-term care team.
Okay, so with that, we can kind of proceed here. And then another thing I just want to mention, that when it comes to the public comment period or the question period, we'll just ask the folks in the room here first if they have any comments or questions, and then we'll go to the phone line. So with that, I'll turn it over to Jay with Navigant.
As Tom mentioned, what we're going to do is we're going to go over briefly what we've done so far, who we spoke with, what the guiding principles are around the project, and present to you some of the information that we've collected from some of the information or some of the individuals that we've met with. Many of you have the PowerPoint slides. This is a rough agenda for what we're going to follow today. The project overview. This is the language directly from the appropriation, and what I wanted to highlight for you just to ground our work is on some of the guiding principles that we pulled from the legislation. And one of them is obviously to develop a plan, but it's also collaboratively with interested stakeholders. And then I want to highlight it's a payment system that promotes quality, ensures access, and reflects simplicity and equity. And those are really important when we're talking about long-term care and when we're talking about access to long-term care. All these are qualities that I think all of us can agree upon, and they're worthy for us to pursue in a reimbursement methodology. Our objectives as part of this project, to develop a plan to present to the agency and to the legislature, collaborate with all interested individuals, and Tom has mentioned numerous times, the agency is willing to meet with individuals. Send him or Lisa an email if you have some interest in meeting one-on-one or as a group. Outline the steps to implement a new prospective payment system, and then address the impact of the system on Medicaid reimbursement rates for nursing homes as well as hospice services. So these are what we pulled out, not only through the legislation, but in speaking with the agency as the guiding principles for how we approach this work. What everybody has agreed upon so far is a need for a very strong quality component. We've heard that from all levels of the agency, as well as every stakeholder group that we've met with so far, is it needs to have a quality component to it. The payment methodology has to allow adequate access to services, and we've heard from lots of individuals that primarily services aren't difficult to access unless you are a specialty subgroup of individuals, and then services become more difficult for you to access. It's got to be equitable. It's got to be fair. It's got to be a methodology that people, going into simplicity, can understand and can explain to individuals. And then it's got to provide some predictability, both for the agency as well as for our nursing facility providers, so they have an idea of what their budgets will be and are likely to, how they're likely to change over time. So I underlined earlier the stakeholder engagement. It's really important because any plan that we develop has to be informed by the stakeholders, by individuals who have whether it's a financial interest or an interest on behalf of the residents. We have to include those thoughts and those concerns in the methodology. We don't want to go blindly and create a methodology that hasn't been vetted, hasn't been informed by the folks who are responsible for administering the services. So you can see some of the folks that we've met with so far, Leading Age of Florida, Florida Association of Health Plans, Florida Healthcare Association, Florida Hospice Palliative Care Association. We've met with the Department of Elder Affairs and their ombudsman to get a feel for what they're seeing throughout long-term care in Florida. And this public hearing, which will be the next step for us to solicit some input on the design. All this input we're collecting, we're documenting. Our Navigant team is furiously writing down comments as you make them. It's going to go into and inform the report that we developed, as will the input from the health plans, the elder affairs and associations, and all that will content and information and the themes from that will ultimately wind up in the report to the legislature. What have we heard so far? We've heard lots of different aspects of what a rate methodology should look like. We have some similarities that everybody agrees upon. We have some issues that are a little more contentious. I highlighted a few of the bigger ones for for you to review. One of those that we've heard is implementation timeline. I think that was a universal comment that was made by providers, is it's got to be a phased-in approach. Quality incentives. Everybody believes that there needs to be strong quality incentives. There's been some disagreement on what those quality incentives should be. As a lot of us know, we've been working on quality for a long time, but we really don't have good nationally recognized quality and outcome measures in long-term care. So what do those look like? What do they need to be? How do you measure them? Is it a new measure? Is it something that already exists? And an acuity-based system. Should the rate methodology be based on the acuity of the population or the case mix of the population within a facility? Access to care. We've heard a lot of information from...
We've heard that it's difficult to hear you on the phone, so could we ask you to come closer to one of these microphones?
Sure.
I think it's, Jay, I think it's that
to
one.
To the pod, but don't handle the table. That's what the people are calling.
Thank you, Jay.
Okay. I actually feel much more comfortable standing. I will stand where you can see. All right. Access to care, is that a little bit better? Any comments on the phone?
It's better.
Okay. Access to care. The measures have to promote access to care. We've heard that from most of the stakeholders that we've met with so far, is there are some segments of the population, and individuals have pointed out people with behavioral issues, people with mental illness, people who are medically dependent upon lots of technology, are all individuals who are difficult. There's difficulty in accessing services. And then there are variations across the state on access. Some areas of the state have better access than others. And how can a methodology help improve access for folks who need nursing facility level of care? We've heard from several entities on an incentive for transitions from nursing homes. The health plans have incentives to transition individuals from long-term care facilities. Should there be some incentives built into a payment methodology that incentivizes nursing homes to work collaboratively with the health plans to ensure that there's some smooth transition and folks are working toward the same goals? Peer grouping, both among the regions and among bed size, should that be part of the rate methodology? Does it need to be remain there? And we've heard different things from different stakeholder groups on how that should proceed. Simplicity shows up quite often in our discussions. In our review of state documentation on rate methodologies, there are some relatively simple methodologies. There are some very advanced, very technically sophisticated methodologies. I think the group to a whole agrees that a rate methodology should be something that we all could understand. When you get into these very advanced algorithms and you try to understand what your payments are going to be based on those algorithms, it becomes really difficult for you to do planning. It becomes difficult for you to discuss with family members why certain types of care can be accessible or not accessible based on the methodologies. And then on the acuity index, how do you measure acuity? Do you use a RUG system? What RUG system, for those of you who don't know resource utilization groups, what RUG system should be utilized, and is it the best measure for acuity within nursing facilities? And then we also heard pretty consistently among the group to have a component based on fair rental value. Now again, there's a lot of variations that we've heard in the theme of fair rental values. How is that calculated? What should be included in fair rental value? What data sources should be utilized? To give a little bit of national perspective on some of the incentives and some of the methods and some of the comments that we've heard so far, this is a map. For those of you on the phone, it's the states using acuity-based systems. And you can get a rough idea that most of the states in the country are using an acuity-based system in their rate methodologies for nursing facilities. The next slide is on fair rental value. And you can see that almost half of the states use some type of fair rental value in their rate methodology. 24 states do. Quality incentives. There's been a lot of discussion among all the groups on the quality incentives. what do they look like, how do we do it, and then some recommendations on these are the states that we're familiar with that have good quality incentive programs or we think should be should inform the process that we develop. So we've heard from several different groups to look at the Tennessee model. Tennessee has a relatively new quality incentive built into their facility funding. Some pieces of it that seem to be very valuable, some pieces that from the simplicity and from the burden perspective may be a little more than we're interested in right now. It could potentially be very administratively burdensome for both the agency as well as the providers to implement at this point in time. Maryland was another one that we were asked to look into. So you can see on that slide just some of the features of their quality incentives. And a lot of them also have a clinical component to them. And I'll highlight, you know, the MDS data sets are used, employment infection control measures, staff immunizations. And then they do different ways that they distribute the incentive funding associated with it. Some states, as they move toward a quality system, had accessible funding that was in addition. Other states did it much like we're looking at in a budget neutral manner. And there's different ways, and we've heard different thoughts on how that should be structured here in Florida. Utah was another one. This state had some additional funding available to it to implement an incentive model. Again, some of the features that were interesting for folks who recommended it were the culture change initiatives, the employee satisfaction programs. So it was much broader than just patient or resident centered measures, but it was also on the staff and the facility itself on measures associated with that. And another feature I should note, they also had some funding available for a facility to access to do enhancements that wouldn't traditionally be available to that facility. Let me stop there and see if there are any questions, and then we'll proceed with the rest of the presentation.
Are there any questions in the audience here so far? No? Okay, we'll go to the phone line.
Presentation mode is now disabled.
Is there anyone on the phone that would like to ask any questions of what Jay has gone through so far? Okay, so I guess here are no questions. We'll mute the line again on the phone, and Jay, you can continue.
Presentation mode is now enabled.
All right. So, payment methodology, payment options, obviously is a big part of this. And for a lot of the stakeholders, many of them were very familiar with what's currently being done in Florida. Some of our stakeholders were more resident advocates and weren't familiar with how the system operates in Florida. So what we provided for most individuals is a real briefing on this is what the current system looks like. And as you can see, it's not based on resident acuity. It's not based on quality. It's not based on a lot of the things that we've heard from the groups that the new payment methodology has to be centered on. The current cost centers, a lot of you are familiar with these. Your direct cost, your indirect cost, operating costs. We've actually heard from different stakeholder groups that there may need to be some adjustments to what we classify as direct cost, indirect cost, administrative cost, operating expenses. And how does that influence, again, the quality of care and access to care? Or are there ways that these measures need to be changed going forward that incentivizes better quality, better care, better outcomes for the residents? Nationally, there are really two different types of structures for what we're looking at, a price-based and a cost-based. One of them is, well, both of them are calculated using traditional cost. Both of them are prospective. One of them is much more like a capitated managed care approach. The other one is based on a facility's historical cost or based upon the cost of a particular facility. To give you a rough idea across the country, these are the states that are using a cost-based, a price-based, and then a mix of both of those. And you can see a fair number of states are utilizing the different approaches. So there's not any one that's been really identified as a model approach. Now, In states that have gone towards fully managed care, where the managed care entities are fully responsible for the total array and there's no controls based on it, they tend to pursue a much more capitated approach where there's a flat rate that's paid for that care regardless of location or potentially level of care, although there's some flexibility there. In this slide, for those of you who were there, it's payment methodology overview. What we're looking for, again, is some predictability. We're looking for kind of the best of both worlds, not going full risk, but where there's some ability for the state to understand what its expenditures are going to be, as well as for the providers to have an idea of where their expenditures or where their costs or where their income and revenue is going to come from. Any questions on that information?
I'm with Crestwood Nursing Center. The slide that you showed regarding the cost base versus price base throughout the country, there are a number of cost base states, but greater than 10, and you indicated there were 40 states that were using the prospective payment system method. Out of those cost base states, which ones are using the PPS system, and you know, what is the methodology there?
I can get back to you on what that is. Off the top of my head, I don't know what states those are. But we have that information readily available, so we can get it to you. Okay, and we have that as a follow-up.
All right. Jay, we'll go to the phone here. Yeah.
Presentation mode is now disabled.
Okay, is there anyone on the phone line that would like to ask a question at this point?
Yes, this is Doug Burke from Healthcare Navigator, and specifically with respect to the RUGs and MDS, you indicated that more than 40 of the states were using an acuity adjustment. How many of those states were using the RUGs MDS, and have you done any survey of those states to find out why they made the transition to that particular model versus other models of measuring acuity? I'm particularly interested in whether it was due to providers feeling that there was some level of efficiency they would gain because the federal government and Medicare were using RUGs and MDS for the Medicare payment. And now that we have some insight into the federal government possibly looking to change to an episodic payment system that has more of a patient characteristics-based payment model that may not be tied to RUGs and MDS, it's possible that level of efficiency may not be there in the future. So it just may be nice for us to have that kind of background to understand why states initially made that decision. So have you done that research, and if not, is that something that you're planning as part of the process?
We've done a portion of that research right now. We have the states who identified using the RUGs, and I'm going to ask my staff if they have that data readily available at their fingertips.
Yeah, so approximately 30 states are using some variation of the RUGs model. Yes.
So if those on the phone who are not asking the question, if you can maybe keep it down, please.
Yeah, so roughly 30 states are using some variation of the RUGs model, with the other 10 using either ADL scores or just acuity based on nurse determination.
Quality, all consistent with our Christian heritage.
And to respond to the episodic-based care that CMS is looking at, there are several different models that we've looked at that looks at trying to capture some of that type of acuity. No state at this point has implemented a model that looks at kind of the clinical. One of the things is a clinical resource group, so that we've kind of looked at a little bit. But no state has implemented a payment methodology that includes that at this point. So we're I'm not going to say hesitant to pursue that, but I think we need more input and more comments and a little more research on would that be an appropriate methodology to use, given that nobody has done it at this point.
What? I don't even know what to do right now.
Okay.
Presentation mode is now enabled.
So back to the quality incentive models. And I'm going to just kind of go through some of the things that we're finding. States are implementing payments, incentive payments to improve quality and access. Almost exclusively, it's to see better outcomes and the desire to see better outcomes for the consumers or for the residents who live in nursing facilities. They vary. They adjust. Some of them are enhancements. Some of them are penalties. Some of them are withholds, the way they pursue it. Some of the quality incentive models are additional funding that can be earned. Some of them are based on measures that the state has created, and it's something that isn't necessarily available with existing data that most states might have. A lot of them use an MDS component to it, and looking at some of the quality measures that are built within the MDS. And then some of them have quality incentives based on, and there's some more on here so you can look at your slides, that are staffing appropriate. So we're looking at the staff turnover, tenure staff, training that staff might receive, and incentivizing those types of activities with the hope or the goal that increased tenured, less turnover staff would result in better outcomes. And then we have the clinical outcomes that are looked at from the quality measures. Hospitalization, readmissions to the hospital, we have reduction or pressure ulcers, number of pressure ulcers, bladder incontinent, or their maintenance programs in place. So more resident-centric, but healthcare outcome measures. And then several states have incorporated the CMS five-star rating into their quality incentive programs. More than a few states actually have a component, a weighting to the five-star. Now, as many of us know, the five-star captures some things really well and some things aren't necessarily really indicative of good quality for the consumer. CMS is actually making some changes to the five-star going forward to better capture resident quality, to include some patient, some resident satisfaction measures, some family satisfaction measures, and are looking at data that is new to long-term care. It exists elsewhere, but in data other than what's been used for the five-star. And then there's the MDS quality measures. MDS has been changed several times over the years to better capture what's going on with individuals who reside in long-term care facilities. They have both short stay quality measures as well as long-term quality measures for those individuals. You can see there's quite a few of them that are available to states to look at, to include. Now, whether all of these are really tied to good quality outcomes is really less clear. We're just now starting to see some of the research associated with the MDS quality measures and what impact they have on the quality of care for individuals. Staffing is a big one. We've heard that from several different groups. And as it ties to not only staffing, but on the minimum staffing requirements, most individuals are familiar that Florida has some of the highest minimum staffing requirements in the country. We've heard that several different times. And what is interesting is the minimum staffing and how that varies from both the national average and the statewide average for staffing. Florida actually does a really good job in exceeding the minimum staffing. So even though there is a floor set, we haven't gotten to the data yet to see how many individuals are at the floor, but it looks like statewide, most providers, on average, exceed the floor of staffing requirements across the state. And you can see this is from the Kaiser Foundation, a study that was done in, I believe it was 2014, on staffing. And the average staffing for Florida is greater than 4.25 hours, nursing hours, both CNA and RN combined. Several states are fall into that category as well. I wanted to also highlight for the group, we're talking about quality and nursing facility payments for long-term care residents. CMS has been pursuing different quality measures for quite some time for individuals who also reside in nursing facilities. And I provided for you a brief overview of the Impact Act of 2014 that requires some additional level of data be collected from nursing facilities. And already they're tying the reporting of the data to a value-based purchasing system. Some of these new measures that are being asked for, in addition to the staffing measures, skin integrity and changes in skin integrity, incidence of major falls, functional status, and both the maintenance of or the level of decline within functional status, and the submission of payroll data. So they are expecting quarterly submissions from nursing facilities of their auditable payroll data so they can start looking at the level of staff turnover that exists in facilities and also the tenure for staff. So they're going to start at the federal level informing the different rating systems that they have using this data, and it's something that we all will have to do. So I put it there because as we're looking at the quality incentives for Florida, are these some that facilities already have to adhere to? Are they ones that we also want to adopt? Because the data will be publicly available at some point. All right. Were there any questions on the presentation to this point? Okay. So we're about ready to start the public comment period. As we navigate moves forward with the prospective payment system, these are some of the areas that we still would like to hear from the various stakeholders on, some items still up for consideration. And this is both a decision the state has to make, but it's also something that we would appreciate some thought on from your perspective as providers and as stakeholders. Does the system need to be standardized across the state? Does it need to be variable based upon geographic regions versus on urban, rural? We've heard, you know, a movement away from large facility, small facility, more towards urban facility, rural facility. Does the north, central, south regions work? Should there be other regions that should be looked at? Do we adjust for acuity? Is this something that the larger public believes is important? And this would be the larger public or the start of the larger public stakeholder input. Do we adjust for Medicaid beds? Some facilities are very heavily Medicaid heavy. Other facilities are less Medicaid heavy. And as we look at acuity adjustments, that level of mix will affect the reimbursement or potentially the reimbursement for the facilities. Do we look at just the Medicaid beds in that facility and adjust for acuity for those? Do we include the entire resident population in that mix? These are some areas that we would like to have some more input. For the fair rental value, what needs to be included? Are there some methodologies, some processes, or variables that ought to be included in a fair rental value system? Again, that's accessible, that's simple to understand, that Florida should be considering as we move forward. And then do we cost apportion based on case mix? And I'm going to turn the mic over to Tom to do public comment.
Well, actually, first, Mal has some stuff we'd like to go through. Kind of the process when we went through DRGs and EAPGs, we kind of laid it out. We thought all that went quite well. And so he'll walk through kind of those the steps here.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Yeah, we just want to kind of highlight the process or the flow that we plan to go through for the project. As Tom mentioned, the final report is due at the end of the year, end of 2016. There'll be a couple of intermediate deliverables. The first is going to be what we're calling an options document, which tries to lay out in a summary what Jay has just talked about and maybe go into a little bit more detail, but a report that suggests what are all the different options that are commonly available in a nursing home payment method. I expect that will be completed sometime in June. It is well along its way. Sorry, sometime in July. otherwise, it's due today. and as Tom mentioned, there is a website or a spot on the ACA website that's dedicated just to this project. So that will be posted on that same place on their website. And then we will have an iterative process over the course of the 4 or 5 months that we have here to work with what's called a governance committee, a group of the executives within the Medicaid agency and Health and Human Services here at ACA, working with us at Navigant to go through various options. And to the extent that we can, we will model each option. Again, this is very similar to what was done on DRGs and EAPGs. We have lots of cost data and MDS data, and over time maybe we'll collect even more than that, and attempt to model how all these different options adjust payment for individual facilities and for nursing facility chains, and kind of review that as a group, and expect to review at least some of those models in these public meetings going forward. And then as a group, we will kind of work our way through what we think is the best model and accept input in meetings like this one, all coming down to a final set of recommendations that would be included in the final report.
Okay, and then what you see up there, that slide there, that's Lisa Smith, who I mentioned at the beginning. If you have any other questions when you leave here or comments or just want to reach out to us, you can feel free to reach out to Lisa. I'm also, you guys can reach out to me as well, but that's the main contact up there with her email and number. So as far as, you know, we said we have these public meetings, but stakeholder meetings, individual stakeholder input, you know, we've had some, as you saw on the slide there. There were some other individual groups themselves, other stakeholders besides those we showed that we have met with. As you move forward in this process, if you'd like to have a stakeholder meeting, we're more than welcome to talk to you. If it's just with the agency and us, we can do that. Or if you feel like you would like to have Navigant there too, that's good too. I mean, reach out to us and reach out to Lisa, and we can try to get those scheduled throughout this process. So, you know, having said all that and what Mal went through, we can probably go to the public comment section now, period, and we'll go to the folks in the room. And I'll just go down my list here that I got. So first on the list is Steve here with Leading Edge.
Well, good afternoon. It's on. Thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity. Steve Bamer, President and CEO of Leading Edge Florida. Thank you also to Navigant and to the agency for the work you've done thus far. Comprehensive overview, which I appreciate. I came to Florida from a state that has recently been through this process, so I'd like to update some of your data when we have an opportunity. It's happened in the last couple of years, so it's a little more recent. I'll keep this brief, and I'll ask our reimbursement expert, Dr. Irwin Bodo, to follow up with some more detail. But generally speaking, our organization represents some of the finest nursing homes in Florida, and our members are rightfully proud of their achievements, particularly along the lines of quality, and would like to see the quality improvements attained during the last decade and a half continue into the future. Having said that, we understand and support the agency's goal of designing a prospective payment plan for nursing homes that simplifies the rate setting process for agencies and providers. But at the same time, we think we need to be cognizant, and we would suggest that implementing a new plan in a budget neutral manner, we understand that's your directive, could create significant numbers of winners and losers and ultimately result in the degradation of the current high quality of care and further erode the nursing home industry's financial strength. So we hope you will consider as you go through the process, and we'll reiterate this, I'm sure, a time or two, a recommendation that we change the current plan only to the extent necessary to attain the goals that have been set by ACA to minimize losses and gains. Within those constraints, we have a few specific recommendations and a few responses to some of the questions that are included in the PowerPoint presentation. First, we recommend that overall payment rates be explicitly tied to the quality measures, and we would recommend quality measures established by CMS through their research and currently used in Nursing Home Compare. It has been discussed time and again throughout the legislative process and even before. It's our position that an effective measure of quality has to be a central component of the payment plan. Secondly, we'd recommend recognition of facility size and geographic variation in staffing and operating costs, something that was addressed in the presentation and no doubt in some of your stakeholder meetings as well. Third, if the revised payment plan is based on a resource utilization grouping model, we believe it should take into consideration current staffing standards that exceed the allocated staffing time of over two-thirds of the current RUGS system groups in use by Medicare. And additionally, the resource utilization model should take into account the additional staff time that we know is required for dementia residents to receive proper care while allowing for special treatment of outliers. Fourth, we want to emphasize another point that was in the presentation, revision of the current property reimbursement system to address the shortcomings of the current fair rental value system, which have been identified. Specifically, we believe it should recognize the impact of replacements and repairs on property values, increase the per bed limitation to reflect realistic property values, implement standard property value indexing, and then recognize size and geographic location variations in property values. Lastly, we recommend, and again, this came up in your stakeholder meetings, I'm sure you will hear this throughout the process as well, that implementation of the new plan be phased in over at least 3 years to allow sufficient time for providers to adjust their business models and transition to a new system. It's my experience in one of those states that was on your presentation that without sufficient transition time, these obviously are potentially significant changes that can do damage to an industry that's already potentially quite volatile. Those are my general comments. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have, and thank you again for the opportunity.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Steve. All right. Go down the next on the list. You got Jan Ross.
My name is Jan Ross, and I'm with the Office of Attorney General Medicaid Fraud Control Unit. One thing that happened with Medicare when they implemented the RUGS rate is that they opened up and expanded the RUG rates to include like super high therapy rates, thinking that that would actually lower some of their outgoing costs. And what it kind of backfired on them, in fact, that all of a sudden the nursing homes have everybody in these high RUG rates. And as a result, there were a lot of lawsuits from some of the bigger chains across the nation. So I would just wonder if you're going to kind of regulate that in any way to have some kind of a established RUG rate watch those RUG rates to see if there are fluctuations like that happening.
At this point, what we're soliciting input on is whether the RUG scores or RUG rates are the most appropriate measures of acuity, and then if it looks like that this is a direction Florida would like to pursue, then we'll look into. There's lots of different ways that states have controlled for maybe I'll call it RUG creep, and some of that's by the different groupers and limiting and putting caps on them. So those are things that we'll be pursuing and getting more information on as we proceed. If it looks like that's the appropriate acuity adjustments that should be done for Florida.
Okay. Next, we have Deborah Franklin.
Hi. Good afternoon. I'm Deborah Franklin. I'm Director of Operations for Not-for-Profit Florida Living Options. Operate retirement communities here in Florida consisting of skilled nursing, assisted living, and rental independent apartments. I'm also past president of Florida Healthcare Association. I'm the current chair of the PPS task force. I'd like to say, first of all, thank you, Navigant and ACCA, Liz Dudat, for making this a transparent and open, and part of the mandate is to be a collaboration, because that's the way it's going to work successfully for the seniors in Florida if we all work together with the pros and cons and through these changes. I also let you know that our task force is currently working on an updated fair rental value model and developing quality measures internally, and we look forward to sharing those with you. I will also take your slide of the questions that you put out there. We'll take that to the task force and look forward to returning some good answers with that slide. If there's anything else that you'd like us to work on, please feel free to pass that to us, and we'll gladly do that, and we look forward to working with you.
Thank you. Joe Mitchell.
I wasn't actually supposed to be on the list. But just want to reemphasize what Deborah Franklin has said, and that is that at Florida Healthcare, I'm president of Florida Healthcare, and we fully support PPS, the transition. We want to be able to be a partner and a team player with you. Quality incentive is one of our higher priorities. We'd like to make that point. And I think the only follow-up I have is I would like to ask the question about time frames. We talked about putting some models out, but is there anything more specific, Mel, in terms of the time frame as far as actually publishing rates and those kinds of things? Is that something you're going to determine as you go, or do you have any other borders on that?
To be honest, I think it's something we'll determine as we go. Of course, any rates that are published as part of the study are recommendations. Nothing, of course, is final until the legislature has agreed to it. But we generally do like to try with each public meeting to have some new iteration to show, and we hope that everyone understands as we go through this process that it is a work in process. The earliest we would be showing any sort of model would be the July meeting, which is currently scheduled for the 21st, I believe. Certainly, at the very least, by August, we'll have some numbers to show. And again, it's really, as we talked about, won't be anything final. We'll be kind of working through things, but at least be able to show what we have been working on so far.
Great. Thanks. Well, we appreciate it. We want to thank you again for your transparency, as Debbie mentioned. I think that's very helpful. And like I said, we want to be a player, and we are collectively, the members that we have met with, and the consensus in our group is that we want to gain consensus from our group and provide that input, and we want to continue to emphasize the quality incentive and quality measures. So we'll work with you on that. Thank you.
All right, next we have Irwin.
Thank you. I'm Irwin Bodo. I work with Leading Edge Florida. Steve Bamer earlier mentioned some of our basic goals and principles going forward with the study. We also have a PPS task force, and we have met already, and we in fact have some of the answers that you have posed earlier, so I'd like to be able to get to that second half of my comments. In between, I have a couple of things I'd like to offer, just comments on the presentation points that you have made earlier. Okay. Perhaps the most important one, really, in our mind, is the quality component of any kind of new reimbursement plan. We'd like to submit that at this particular point in time, the quality measures used for the CMS nursing home compare are probably as much of a state of an art as we can have at the time. We know it evolves over time, but we also know that it takes into consideration, when you look at the overall nursing home compare scores, it takes into inspection reports, it takes into staffing, as well as takes into the quality measures. So we would recommend not to reinvent the wheel, but rather to go ahead and use something already in existence. We know that CMS is going to update those measures. They are going to update the nursing home compare with those measures and other components as we go forward. Perhaps patient satisfaction or resident satisfaction will be incorporated at one point, which I think is an important element. But we strongly urge that we use something that is pretty much understandable. It's known for a number of reasons. One for research, the other one is because it's being used widely in the nursing home compare. We also would like to say that in whatever plan we develop, the quality component should be a significant component, a significant factor. One of the earlier comments that you listed in your presentation, one of the stakeholder comments was no more than 3%. In the quality component, we'd like to recommend somewhere around 10%. At the minimum, we'd like to see that the current quality assessment add-on, the flat add-on that's available to all nursing homes, be part of that, and the other one is the Medicaid adjustment rate. Those two comprise somewhere about 4.5% or so of the current budget. I think we'd like to see that think higher. Clearly, that is somehow tied to how are you going to set the prices? If the prices are going to be set at a level that way too low, then perhaps quality assessment should be higher. If the price that's set is higher, then that could have a tempering impact on the quality assessment itself. Also, as far as the rugs, I think you, well, Steve mentioned about two-thirds of the rugs components already have higher, lower staffing reference than what we already have for the state of Florida. But also, if we're going to have some exceptions, some add-ons, whether it's for dementia care, whether it's for ventilator care, we're totally supportive of any of those potential options, but we'd like to make sure that somehow it's taken into consideration that it is perhaps an add-on overall. If we have some kind of a special, for example, we're not paying for ventilator care right now. I would not like to see additional price carved out for ventilator care that's not really in the current budget. I would like to see that as something of an add-on. Clearly, as far as the Navigant folks are concerned, that is not your mission. That is not what you're looking at. But as the state is concerned, they need to take into consideration what we're paying for right now versus what we do not. Let's see. One of the things you mentioned in your presentation was access to care, and in particular, whether we're going to take into consideration Medicaid participation, the degree to which a facility has Medicaid residents. Perhaps you know it, maybe not, but most of the facilities in the state of Florida have a certificate of need condition, which includes a mandatory participation in Medicaid at a given level. To the extent that the plan has significant losses for some of the providers, and I'm emphasizing only for those that have significant losses, then perhaps those CO1 conditions need to be modified. Again, that is not a plan issue, it's not a reimbursement issue per se, but it has an impact overall. And if you allow me to go to the next page. Okay, these comments relate to the questions that you have posed at the end of your presentation. Adjust for wage differences, we'd like to see a definite yes to that. We would recommend that there should be some kind of adjustments, whether you do it through a labor trend factor adjustment or whether or not you do it through geographic differentials, that's clear any option. Facility size, similarly, we'd like to see an adjustment for facility size, if for no other reason, because of the economics of scale. Adjust for acuity differences, we've talked about that before. Quality differences, absolutely, and we think that's probably the most important component if we go to a price-based model. I know you all know that, but I feel compelled to mention that we'd like to look at nursing home care not as a commodity. It is not a commodity. But even if you look at the commodity market, a same type, whether you're talking about a TV or car or whatever, the price is different based on what kind of specifications that particular product has and what quality, what warranty, and so on is offered. I would like to think, at the minimum, we have something similar for the nursing home care. Geography, I think it depends pretty much what you're going to do with wage adjustments. If you use geography for wage adjustment, then clearly we don't need to do anything separate. Medicaid beds, I mentioned that related to CON, currently have the Medicaid trend adjustment. I think it's reasonable for high Medicaid facilities to be somehow guaranteed that they're not going to go bankrupt under a new plan. Cost components, this is something we talked about in a meeting we had with you guys earlier last month. And I guess the simple answer is it's going to depend whether we're going to have an acuity-based system or not. If we're using the RUGS model, either in a collapse form or not, then I would like to think that the current direct care component needs to be adjusted by incorporating some of the indirect care components to corresponding to what's the basic measures used for under Medicare RUG system. If we are not using an acuity-based, some kind of a RUGS model, then I would recommend that we still move some things into the direct care component, such as some of the therapies and so on, but then combine the administrative component, which is the currently operating cost and indirect care cost that remains. Phase-in, we'd like to request a three-year phase-in, and the typical one-third, two-third in each of the first 2 years, and then 100% in the third year. And thank you very much. Those are the comments.
Thank you, Erwin. That's all who have signed up that is asked to make a comment, but is there anyone else here in the room that would like to make anything additional? Okay, sure.
Hi, I'm Marjorie Evans, CEO of Children's Comprehensive Care, which is a division of Broward Children's Center. I would love to see you go on an acuity-based reimbursement for our children. They're very acute care. They have to go to the intensive care units. They can't go to hospitals. And some of them require very specialized trachs and specialized ventilators, for which we are not reimbursed, and special beds. I can go on, as you can imagine, with children, but it would really be helpful if you would address the acuity of the kids. Thank you.
Okay, is there anyone else in the audience that has any questions or wants to make any comments? Okay, seeing none in the audience, I'm going to open it up to the phone line.
Presentation mode is now disabled.
And I would say if anyone's on the line that would like to make a comment, whoever's not talking, if you could please mute your phone so we can eliminate some of this background noise, I would appreciate that. So is there anyone on the line that would like to make a comment or ask a question? You're free to do so. Just please state your name and who you're with.
Yes, this is Doug Burr with Healthcare Navigator, and I'd like to echo some of the comments that you heard from Joe and Deborah and Irwin, but a couple of additional comments and a couple of things that I'd like to state that I disagree with a couple of the comments on. But first, with respect to peer grouping, I would say that I agree that we need to go back and take a look at the peer groupings. Right now, as everyone knows, we have six large-small facilities in terms of size and North, Central, South. I would say that for simplicity purposes, we would only want to make changes if we go back and take a look at historical data and find that there is something in the data to prove and support that there is a demonstrable difference in wages or benefits or some other component of cost that would require us to do something other than the current six peer groups. And I'd like to suggest that Navigant go through that exercise of taking a look at historical data, maybe 1 or 2 years worth of cost data for the sector, and carve it up into MSAs or counties or that type of statistical data to see if there is any underlying data. This was a recommendation that we had made on a report that the agency had done, I think, probably about 8 years ago when we were thinking about doing some redesigns to the system, was taking a look at data and going back and looking at peer groups. We ended up never getting to that point of going through that exercise, but it was something that we thought at the time might be worth the effort, and I'd say that would probably be the way to go about doing it. But again, only making those changes if the data actually proved that it was necessary. Then with respect to the quality provisions, one of our overarching themes that I'd like to have considered in quality is that any measure that we use or any formula that we construct or weight that we apply to, say, an index for the quality needs to address and consider both achievement on the part of a facility and also improvement on the part of a facility. The last thing we want to do is create a situation where a facility happened to be the worst operator in the state and just gives up because they have no ability to ever become a facility in the highest quintile or quartile or decile. You still want them to give an effort because you want them to be rewarded for a level of improvement. They might end up being the best, the highest improving facility, but still not making it above the bottom quartile of facilities. So I think you need both improvement and achievement somehow in the quality domain. Then it's also important that we focus on and emphasize the long stay quality measures.
one of the things that I see more and more being heavily weighted into the five-star and nursing home compare are short-stay measures. And I think CMS is going to heavily move in that direction more and more simply because that's they're focusing on the Medicare population, the post-acute population. So I think we need to be careful from that perspective because hospital readmissions and those types of measures are great for the Medicare short-stay population, but they're not really going to help us in the area of prevention, of exacerbation of complex chronic conditions in the Medicaid long-stay population. The third thing on the quality is that the measures we use ought to be measures that are achievable by 100% of providers. Putting in place a system where we're ranking providers against each other creates a situation where there's some portion of the industry that's guaranteed to fail. And I don't think that that's the appropriate approach for our quality measure program. I think we ought to be putting in place a program whereby there's a hard and fast line and everybody has the opportunity to be a high performer by achieving a level of success that's above whatever that threshold point is. With respect to acuity and case mix adjustment, one of the comments and concerns that I have, and for the researchers, I'll caution you a little bit about this, is given the level of Medicare utilization that we have in the state of Florida, which is uniquely greater than many other states in the country, when you look at the acuity, you're going to probably find that relative to the Medicaid population, there's a large piece of the staffing that's going to be attributable to your Medicare population. And as such, in trying to create a system that's budget neutral, you're going to end up with a large pool of funds that needs to be reappropriated back into the payment system after you've done the acuity adjustment. We need to be very careful with how you incorporate those dollars back into the system, particularly if it's a price-based system, because in doing so, you can end up with a very odd scenario where you're almost forced to set a price so high that any floor or incentive program you put in place will create a floor that could be above the median and make it very difficult for many providers. You'll end up with a lot of providers, particularly high Medicaid providers, that get negatively impacted by a floor calculation or a median calculation. They're just not spending enough to get to that bottom level, especially if, as Irwin suggested, you're carving a large chunk of the dollars out and setting them aside for the quality incentive pool.
And I happen to think that 10%
is too much to carve out if there's not new dollars coming in from the legislature.
Just a moment.
Those are probably the most significant of my comments at this time. I'm sure there'll be other comments that I follow up with in writing at a later period of time.
Okay. Thanks, Doug. Appreciate those comments, and obviously you're welcome to communicate anything else to us. Are there anyone else on the line? We're hearing some other hold music on there, but besides that, is anyone that would like to make any other comments or questions? Okay, good. We're in this, so we don't hear this hold music.
Presentation mode is now enabled.
All right. Well. Is there anyone else here? Give anyone another chance at it? Any other comments or anything? Okay. So like I said, feel free to reach out to us, you know, as we go through this process. But just stay alert for our next provider alert that we send out, notifying you when the next public meeting would be. And before I close off here, is anyone else wants to make any, at the table, make any final comments? No? Any other agency staff over there, comments? No? All right. So thank you guys, and we'll be in touch and look forward to your next meeting.